powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
All right, joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, the Ringer's Tate Frazier. He's host of the One Shining podcast and Through the Ringer on FanDuel TV. Tate, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm happy to be back. It's the best time of the year. I love when people are reaching out and they want to talk about college basketball. It's we get about 2 weeks of this, so we got to live in the moment and love it. So I'm having a great time.
We are having a great time here covering, I'm going to say, a local team, certainly for my co-host, who is a Coug. But the Cougs, number seven, taking on number 10, Drake. Tell me a bit about this matchup.
Well, first, this is a tough draw for the Cougs in the first round. Drake is a team that, I mean, they're kind of like the darlings of March. You got Tucker DeVries, who's their best player. His dad happens to be the head coach of Drake, Darian DeVries. It's a tough 10 seed because a lot of people think the MVC was a really good conference this year. A lot of people wanted Indiana State to be in the tournament as well. Drake won their tournament with the MVC. They get the automatic bid. So it's a tough draw for the Cougs, but it's one of those things where you got to beat good teams in March if you want to move on. We all know how the game goes. And, you know, unfortunately, they're going to have a lot of Drake fans in the building because it's going to be in Omaha. So they'll probably feel like the away team there. But, you know, Kyle Smith, he loves being the underdog. He's got a really good team with some really great storylines themselves. So it'll be a tough first round game, but I think the Cougs can handle business.
Tate, I hope we get it done, man. It's going to be tough over there for my guys. And when I look at this matchup, it's about the Washington State Cougars being able to slow down a hot Drake team. When you look at the matchups, are there any individual matchups in this game that you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, it's like, who's going to guard Tucker DeVries on Wazoo? I think that's the real question. Is it Yakimovsky? Is it Isaac Jones? Do you double him? And then, you know, as we both know, some of the best offense for the Cougs is offensive rebounds. Drake does a really good job of clearing the boards and getting defensive rebounds and ending possessions. So those second chance points might not be there for the Cougs. I'm hoping that Miles Rice, who has kind of been a little shaky with his three-point shot down the stretch, hopefully he finds new life from the outside. Jalen Wells, hopefully as well, can knock down some shots. You know, it's one of those things where hopefully Wazoo can play their game, slow it down, like you said, and be able to get on the offensive glass. And I think that'll be a big difference for him.
Hey, last question for me on the Cougs before I get some other teams here. But we talked with Kyle Smith yesterday and we said, hey, are you interested in signing an extension and staying there in Pullman? He said he loves Pullman, once a Coug, always a Coug, that they're working on something now. Bump was a little on the fence with, like, how do we interpret that? Is that just, you know, something he's saying? Do you personally see Kyle Smith coming back to Pullman after this season?
I hope so. I think what he's done there and his ability to, I mean, they had so much talent there last year. I mean, guys like Muhammad Gay, TJ Bombo, we saw at Nova, DJ Rodman at USC. I mean, there was so much talent that he lost. And, you know, to find guys from Wenatchee, you know, a guy like Isaac Jones, I mean, that just shows that he understands the area and how to find talent and how to nurture that talent in Pullman. So I'm hoping that he stays there. Obviously, there's always rumblings, right? And every time that people make lists and there's a coach that's done a really good job, they end up on those lists. I mean, Wazoo saw it with their football coach as well, right? You know, during the season. So with Jake Dickert. So it's one of those things where Wazoo fans, unfortunately, that's just part of the game. Stanford, I'm sure, will call him. They even said the Huskies would call him. I can't imagine he would go and saddle up with UW, but who knows? So I think Kyle Smith will be there, but you never know in college sports, as we all know.
So I'm looking at these number one seeds as I strategize for my bracket. And the scariest one is University of Houston, man. They lost by dang near 30 points in the game prior. What is it about this team that makes you believe, and what is it about this team that makes you doubt them a bit?
Yeah, before that Iowa State game, I would have said that Houston's probably, you know, maybe outside of UConn, you know, we can be frank there. But Houston was a team that you could really trust. You know, Kelvin Sampson's one of the best coaches in the country. They have a style. They make you play their way typically. But we saw when things go the wrong way. Obviously, losing Tugler was a big deal. I thought he was a nice piece for Houston. That happened a couple of weeks back. But, yeah, I mean, the second round game will be between either Nebraska or Texas A&M. Texas A&M has one of the best backcourts in the tournament. We always talk about guard play when it comes to March. Texas A&M checks the box there. Houston's guards are great. Jamal Shedd, first team All-American. So, I mean, Houston checks a lot of the boxes. You know, before that Iowa State game, like I said, I'm trying to wipe it from my memory. I thought Houston had a had a good path to get to the Final Four. But, you know, A&M is very worrisome in the second round. In fact, honestly, all the 8-9 matchups for the one seeds are pretty intimidating. And I could see a lot of them going sideways for those one seeds.
I'm also getting my bracket together, but I'm looking at some of those really early rounds. Which double-digit seed do you think has the best shot at a Cinderella run?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. New Mexico seems to be the team that everyone has fallen in love with. I really like this team. Richard Pitino, obviously son of Rick Pitino. You got Jalen House, son of Eddie House. You got Jamal Mashburn Jr. Obviously, his dad is Jamal Mashburn. And then they have another guard, Donovan Dent. Those three guards are great. I worry about who they have on the inside, and they're playing a Clemson team that has a really good front court. When P.J. Hall, who's an All-American type player, and Ian Shefflin, those two guys will be a tough matchup. But New Mexico is one team that I could see just with their guard play being able to make a run. I think a lot of people like McNeese, you know, formerly known as McNeese State, but Will Wade is there, and he has changed. You know, the conversation. He'll be going up against Gonzaga in the first round. So I think that's actually a tough draw for them. We'll see what happens. So that's another team that's been thrown out there. And then James Madison, the Dukes. This is a team that's won 31 games. They also have a really good backcourt with Terrence Edwards and TJ Bickerstaff. So those are some, you know, 11-12, 2-12 season and 11 seed that I think will get a lot of people's attention. And they have a lot of talent, and they're definitely capable of making a run.
There's a name that always pops up every single year when it comes to just the team in general. And they deserve respect. They get my respect. But Creighton, what is it about Creighton and that program over there that allows them to be so consistent over the past decade?
Well, the good news is that they've had a lot of the talent return. I mean, obviously, Ryan Nimhart, was able to get out of there and go to Gonzaga. But typically, Creighton, you know, brings their guys back. And Baylor Shireman was one of the biggest additions last year, had a great year for them, gets them to the Elite Eight. And I talked to him in the Maui Invitational a couple of years ago, and I asked him, like, what's the goal? And he said to get to the Final Four. So I think this is a team that has a one-train mind. Their coach, Greg McDermott, said, I don't want to go to Ohio State. I don't want to go to Louisville. I want to be the coach at Creighton. He gets a contract extension. And you got Trey Alexander, who's an NBA first-round pick. You got Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's one of the best bigs in the country, especially on the defensive end. So they have the pieces to make a run in March, and Shireman's a guy that could end up being, you know, a most outstanding player type if he gets hot from the outside. So Creighton just kind of checks a lot of the boxes. They have a really good head coach, and it's not bad when you have Nike on your side. You know what I mean? So, you know, they got a good formula going up there in Omaha.
UConn's definitely going to be the most popular pick, a chance to be the first back-to-back champ since 2007. I picked them in mine just because I couldn't think of a reason not to, but it sometimes feels too good to be true when there's something so obvious. Right. So what's their path to a win look like?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Connecticut obviously won every game last year by double digits, and you know, it looked like they were just an unstoppable force. And I think a lot of people, even though it's a different team, they kind of have the same DNA, obviously, because they have their head coach Dan Hurley, and they just run great offense, and they come in waves, and they never stop. And I think that's the thing about UConn that's very fascinating. The other fascinating thing is their second round game. Usually the defending champs struggle in that 8-9 game. We saw it with Villanova. They won in 2016. 2017, they played Wisconsin. Nigel Hayes and that Wisconsin team get the big upset over them. Baylor 2021, right? The next year, they played North Carolina in an 8-9 game, and they end up getting upset in overtime. So UConn going up against FAU, a team that was in the Final Four last year, a team that, you know, has pretty much the exact same team that went to the Final Four back in the tournament, playing a UConn team with some of these guys. I mean, obviously Tristan Newton was there, but like Cam Spencer is going to be in a heightened role. So I think FAU, Dusty May is trying to probably get himself a really good contract at somewhere like Louisville. So you beat a team like UConn in the second round and get back to the Sweet 16. And, you know, the price yesterday is not the price today, is what Dusty May may be saying if he's able to upset UConn in the second round. So that would be the game that really worries me. And then potentially they could play San Diego State, another Final Four team from last year in the Sweet 16. So it's definitely not an easy draw for UConn. But as you said, it's hard to pick against them because they're just so good.
I got to ask you about the team with the most NCAA tournament appearances in all of the land, University of Kentucky. When you think about all the talent that's been through there, especially when Calipari's been there, he only has one national championship. How much pressure is on him this year to get it done? And do you see a world where he's really on the hot seat and guys are the alums are calling for a different name?
Yeah, I mean, Big Blue Nation does not mess around, and they don't waste time, and they don't like being BS'd around. And John Calipari is one of those guys where, you know, he has been able to sell the dream of the NBA. He'll remind you that he has made $3 billion in contract money from his players during his era. But like you said, it's one national championship, and Big Blue Nation, you know, they're striving for nine. They expect their next national championship. I mean, they got a tough first round game against Oakland. Greg Campy, the longest tenured coach in college basketball, he's seen a thing or two, and Kentucky is still a young team. Kentucky is very strange. They basically bring off their two best players off the bench. You know what I mean? And Reed Shepherd and Rob Dillingham. So they don't even start their two best players who are going to be top 10 picks in the NBA draft. So they're a very interesting team because they have so much talent. But when you just kind of look at the draw that they have there, like I said, Oakland in the first round, potentially in the second round, you play Texas Tech or NC State, two really tough teams. NC State has some assistants over there that used to be with Calipari. That game is going to be in Pittsburgh. That's a place NC State has done really well in the past. People remember the flute from the Villanova game that happened to be in Pittsburgh when NC State upset them back in 2015. So I think Kentucky has a tough path to get out of Pittsburgh, but that is kind of where home is for John Calipari in Pittsburgh. So maybe he feels good, and they can get up and meet up with Marquette, and that should be a great game in the Sweet 16. And if they're able to get to the Elite Eight, you know, you never know what happens because, like you said, they have so much talent in the building.
Let's talk about the Zags' path a little bit. It feels weird to talk about them in any way as a weaker team, but they were fortunately able to obviously fight their way in a tough Midwest region, though, with a much better Purdue team, who I don't think we can take as a disappointment early this year. What do you make of that Midwest region and of the Zags' path?
Yeah, I think Purdue got the, like, as far as Purdue being able to make their first Final Four since 1980, I feel like they got a pretty generous path to get there. I think Kansas is obviously hampered with injuries. They have a tough matchup with Samford in elevation. Samford's going to be, you know, pressing them the whole game. Gonzaga's got a tough matchup because Will Wade is a really good basketball coach, and Will Wade is having the time of his life, and apparently someone on his staff, his name's Brandon Brackets is the nickname for him, but he apparently forecasted that they were going to have a 5-12 game against Gonzaga. So he had been scouting Gonzaga, you know, longer than most people would have been scouting a team, you know, that's going to be in the tournament. So that's a little bit worrisome from the Gonzaga standpoint. I really like this team. Second in the country in field goal percentage. You know, they're able to score the basketball. We've seen them have some electric half. They've scored 60, 63 in a first half, and then they scored 60 in a second half of the season. So, like, they're able to put up points. I think McNeese has actually been a little bit overrated. They have this guy, Shahade Wells, who is great. But I think Gonzaga wins this game. I'm thinking that Samford could upset Kansas. But if not, I think Gonzaga could beat an injured Kansas team. And then I could see Gonzaga getting to the Sweet 16 and matching up with Purdue. And you got Graham Ike taking on Zach Edey. Ben Gregg will probably be important in that game. I'm not sure that Gonzaga has the depth to deal with Purdue, but who knows? You know, maybe they get hot. Maybe Nimhardt is, you know, has one of those Cinderella runs, and we could see a Nimhardt game, by the way, Gonzaga Creighton in the Elite Eight if things break that way. So Gonzaga definitely has a path, and I think that them being a five seed is actually takes a little bit of pressure off Mark Few and the rest of his team.
Now, I'm going to assume, like, I have to subscribe for the answer to this question. So if I'm taking money out your pocket, you know, I mean, don't be afraid to shoot it down. Who you got in your Final Four?
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's always tough with these picks, right? I mean, you know, anything could happen. I think I was telling people about college basketball. It's like what you've seen of a team, the best of them, if you like them, you think of the best of them. If you don't like them, you think of the worst of them. So I'm thinking this year is going to be a very chalky bracket. I think there's going to be a lot of one seeds that make their way to the Final Four. But this is the Final Four that I put together. I got Connecticut coming out of the East. I think it's going to be a really tough run there. I think they're going to play BYU in the Elite Eight. I got Wazoo going to the Sweet 16, actually. Oh. They're going to upset Iowa State in my bracket. So I got Connecticut winning the East. Out West, North Carolina. I'm going to be out here in Los Angeles. That's my alma mater, North Carolina. So I got UNC taking on Arizona in that Elite Eight game. It's the Caleb Love game. I have said that I think Arizona is going to win that game. That's probably me trying to be very objective, but if North Carolina's in the Elite Eight and they have a chance to go to the Final Four, I think they get it done. So let's say Connecticut, UNC, and then we go to the South. I got a 1983 3 rematch in the Elite Eight, NC State taking on Houston, just for the history of the game. I got Houston going to the Final Four. And then in the Midwest, which I had a little bit of craziness here, I had Gonzaga actually beating Purdue, getting to the Elite Eight. And then you got Oregon taking on Texas in the bottom of that. Gonzaga, Oregon. Oregon went to the Final Four in Phoenix back in 2017. So did Gonzaga. This time around, Gonzaga returned. So Gonzaga and North Carolina go back to the Final Four. I got Connecticut, Houston, UNC, Gonzaga. I got UNC beating UConn. I got Houston beating Gonzaga, and I got Houston beating Carolina to win the title.
I'm just going to be filling this. I'm going to re-listen back to this, Tate, and just write it out for our own work bracket. My last question is, Curtis, who you spoke with, is an alma mater for Arizona. Obviously, they went in 97, and he pointed out that it's the last time a team in the Western United States even won. You've got some representation there, at least in the Elite Eight moving forward. Why do you think that is, and do you think it's a streak that ends this year?
Yeah, I think Arizona's got a great shot. This Arizona team, the only thing that they struggle with sometimes is when they need someone to get a shot for them, it's Caleb Love. And Caleb Love can be amazing and Caleb Love can be a disaster. And a lot of times there's no in-between. We call it the Caleb Love experience. So I think that's the only thing that worries you. But Caleb's already been there. He's been to a national championship game. I like Keshawn Johnson and Caleb Love. These are two guys that have made runs in March. I think that, that kind of experience is very valuable for Tommy Lloyd and his staff. I think, New Mexico is a team that's out west that can make a run. BYU is another team. I mean, Gonzaga, obviously, I had them going to my Final Four. I mean, there's going to be a team that gets over the hump. UCLA was right there before, Jalen Suggs hit that half-court shot, So we've seen teams make runs from the West. I don't really know how to explain it. It's a very strange phenomenon, but it has to end at some point. It's kind of like the Big Ten. They haven't won a title since 2000. Eventually something's got to give and they got to win. So that's why Purdue has a chance. The odds say eventually it's got to happen.
One Shining Podcast with Tate Frazier, part of the Ringer NBA Podcast Network, is essential listening, especially this month, this week, as you fill out your brackets. Follow along with Tate's information about all this stuff. Great previews, great stuff. The latest episode uploaded yesterday, so go check it out. He is Tate Frazier. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tate.
Of course. Anytime. Appreciate you guys. Hope we all enjoy our March.
Fingers crossed. Thanks.
Let's get to 4 Down Territory.
This is 4 Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, what's something a 2025 draft-eligible quarterback is doing you feel will and should become a trend?
First, let me say that the name always jacks me up.
Okay.
Ewers.
Oh, Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, is it Ewers?
I always say Ewers, almost like you or me.
I would say ew, like...
I think it's Ewers.
Ewers.
It's hard to say, though, so okay. I say Ewers.
All right, well, you know what I'm talking about. Now, Texas quarterback is throwing at Texas's pro day. Now, he's not eligible for the draft until 2025, and I think this is a trend that might pick up because if you are one of those guys, now, this guy also has a seven-figure NIL deal on the way. He's got his money, but he's preparing for the NFL. I saw this, and I thought he is interviewing for a job he has not yet qualified for. Yeah, he's qualified physically, but as far as his years, he's not qualified. Stacey, you ever apply for a job, and you see all the requirements, you're like, yeah, I got like 1 out of 4 of those, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway.
That is correct.
That's how I feel about our guy Ewers here. I'm on Texas Pro Day, but I think this is something that we're going to start seeing. And I love the change that these athletes are having on just the whole process of Pro Day, of the draft, NILs and all that. Obviously, we feel like there needs to be some regulation when it comes to NILs, but I like this. If you are a quarterback that is projected to be in the top 10 at your position, even a receiver, running back, whatever, why not go out there and show these scouts while they are there what you can do? I like this trend. I hope it continues.
Second down. Speaking of quarterbacks, why do you feel Caleb Williams' pro day will do absolutely nothing to hurt or help his stock?
This is just him getting in front of his friends and having a good time. And the reason why it's not going to hurt or help him is because we know that he can throw the football. We know that he's talented. We know that he can extend plays. The one question we have with Caleb Williams is, can he be on time throwing the football in an 11-on-11 setting? You're not going to see that on a pro day. he extends a lot of plays. He buys himself some time. The question always is, can that translate in the NFL? Some guys are able to do that. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, even Brock Purdy can get it done and extend some plays. We know it can be done, but the one question we have, we're not going to be able to see. I would love to see him get in a three-step drop, diagnose the defense, and boom, throw a slant on time. Or get into a five- or seven-step drop, get to the top, hitch, climb the pocket, and boom, let the ball go. We're just not going to see that. Caleb Williams is going to be the number one or number two pick. People are saying Jaden Daniels might slide in there. I think it's going to be Caleb Williams. So this is just him going out and having fun. It's not going to hurt or help him. I believe his pro day is either today or the 27th. We shall see. But nah, it's all good for Caleb.
Third down. Who has your attention once again going into the 2024 NFL season?
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
I was trying to think of who it might be. That wasn't at the top of my list.
And the reason why, you got Mike Williams, so now you're teaming him up with Garrett Wilson. That is a nice 1-2 combo. You had tight end Conklin, who had his best year when it comes to receptions and yards, and he did that without Rodgers. You also still have Breece Hall. But who did they add? One of the problems that the Jets had last year is they could not protect their quarterback. What do? Tyrone Smith from Dallas, he's a tackle. They grab him. Morgan Moses, tackle from the Ravens. They grab him. John Simpson, guard from the Ravens. You grab him. And then you go and get a defensive tackle, Javon Kinlaw from the Niners. They are adding, and they're being really intentional with the additions to their football team. A look at Aaron Rodgers. He is no longer going to run for vice president. We can put that thing away. Not worry about that distraction. But the Jets, once again, they got my attention because of the things that are the players that they added in the years that these guys had without them. Conklin. Now, Aaron Rodgers is not big on using this tight end, but if Conklin can put up 600 yards like he did this year and about 50-something catches and continue to be what I think most tight ends are to the offenses as a catalyst, it's going to be great, man, or has the potential to be great. He has my attention right now.
Fourth down. Let's talk center. Why will Olu be the starter next year?
Olu with Timmy, it's going down. And the reason why it's going down is because Evan Brown just signed with the Cardinals on a one-year deal. He is no longer there. He wasn't on the team, obviously. He was a free agent, but he is there. That opens up room for Olu with Timmy. Now, what if they do draft a center? The centers are the top three centers in the country right now are Oregon's Jackson Powers. Mm-hmm. You got West Virginia's Zach Frazier and Georgia's Cedric Van Pran. I don't think they're going to go with a center with that number 16 pick. If they move up, they're definitely not going to go with a center. Mm-hmm. I hope they do not make a move out of the first round. You need to use that number 16 pick because I think if they do go offensive lineman, it's going to be the young man from the University of Washington. I'm looking at Olu with Timmy and saying, it's all set up for you now. You had a year to learn under Evan Brown. He is gone. I don't think they're going to draft a center. It's going to be all up to you. Last year, my man played in 129 snaps. It's only 12% of the snaps. Evan Brown played in 960. So he had a bunch of snaps to learn and watch that film. Special teams-wise, he played 58 snaps. That's 12%. That number is going to go down. The offensive numbers are going to go up. It's all set up, man. I like the way that they brought this young man along. If they do get a center, they get him late. There's going to be some competition. But I think that they like Olu. That's why they were okay letting Evan Brown walk. We'll see if they draft a center. I don't think they'll do it at number 16.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Make sure you download the Seattle Sports app, by the way. I just saw a tweet about Troy Dannon that makes his departure very, very interesting. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. Why not get started with a tweet, an X, a post about Troy Dannon, the now departed athletic director for Washington, spent less than 6 months on the job before leaving to Nebraska. Pete Thamel breaking the news this morning, Dannon finalizing a six-year deal there. Pac-12 insider John Canzano, though, reports, this is what I was talking about when I said I saw something interesting, that Troy Dannon's family never made the move with him to Seattle. John Canzano said the family move date kept getting pushed back, kids were in school, etc. Not sure how his departure will get spun, but the family stuff matters. His family is expected to move to Nebraska.
So I'm saying you never make big time decisions without consulting the wife.
Yeah.
Here's another thing, though.
Yeah.
It ain't easy just to uproot a family and move them to a different region. the kids do have school. Maybe they have sports. There are relationships there. Who knows? But 6 months, I feel like, is enough time. He got the job in October. So you could have finished. The kids could have gotten through their first semester of school. Then you move during winter break and you're good to go. It's not like they're hurting for cash. You got movers to kind of help you through the whole situation. Mm-hmm. So is there some tampering going on then? Is that what we're saying? Did Nebraska, when he got the job, did Nebraska hit him up like a month later, like, you up? What's up?
There's definitely something that, to me, points to certainly maybe like him and his wife or his family not expecting this to be a permanent stop. You can't have him say, this is permanent, we're not going anywhere, and then the family never move. And I know that there are families that are like, I don't want to uproot my kids, I don't want to take them out of school, but A, he's got young kids, and B, I just think that that's kind of the life you sign up for as a coach, as an AD. To me, this is, you never expected Washington to be it for you.
Also, I don't think Nebraska would have known their job was even going to come available because their previous athletic director, Trev Alberts, only left within the last couple weeks. So their job wasn't open at the beginning of Dannon's tenure at UW. And their previous athletic director, Trev Alberts, was a Nebraska alum. So they were right, kind of blindsided by the whole thing, too. Like, hey, this guy, we thought this was his dream job. Apparently not.
Fair question, though, Bump. I wondered the same thing.
So we're making too much of it, then.
Well,
I mean, if the job just came open, he moved over here. I mean, logistically, it's not easy just to uproot a family.
It's not.
And
it's
then not. ADs last longer than head coaches, typically. ADs are going to be here, from 4 to 6, typically. So maybe we're looking too into this because October is pretty much the start of a school year. I'm sure his kids play some type of sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm not leaning too much into that. At first I was, but as I break it down, I would imagine me leaving Washington and say moving to Arizona. My wife ain't just going to uproot the kids. I'm going to be there for a while by myself before the family comes.
I also think, well, you've got teenagers, but also outside of even just that, you know, Kate Middleton has really made me a true conspiracy theorist. Like, I understand conspiracy theories in a different way now. I don't trust anyone. I don't trust a video of Kate Middleton. I don't trust that's Kate Middleton. I see this tweet and I go, why?
That's all it took. Remember, I had my get
logic
off my lawn conspiracy theories
here.
And
yeah,
you called me crazy.
Exactly.
All right, now
and
you're
now,
with me.
And now I got my tin hat on and I'm pulling it out, putting it on next to you. UW president Anna Marie, is it Kase? It's my own president, released a statement on Troy Dannon's departure. This is deeply disappointing, she said, but as a university committed to the welfare of the entire individual, we understand the need to make choices based on what's best for one's family. We wish Troy well. Love that. Leading this program is one of the greatest opportunities in the country. We've seen time and time again how Huskies compete and win on the national stage, and we're grateful for the strong support of Husky Nation, who have positioned us so well for the future. And with Coach Fish joining our group of talented coaches who are leading teams of incredible student athletes, our future is bright. So they said that they're going to begin the search for the next director of athletics immediately. I look forward to recruiting a leader who's committed to the goals and values of Husky athletics.
Yeah, good. And I hope whoever they gets gives us a real chance. Mm-hmm. Give it 3, 4, 5 years to really see what you can do. Because like I've always said, man, University of Washington, it's set up to do great things in the athletic department. And we see that when you look at some of the other teams. But football sets the tone. So support the football program, support Fish, and get an AD who you think is going to be here for a while.
Erin O'Connell, E-R-I-N, is the current deputy athletic director and chief operating officer for UW Athletics. She will serve as the interim AD in the meantime while the school goes on its search. Next story in the timeline, we are heading to the Eagles, where former Giants running back Saquon Barkley's 6-year-old daughter took a shot at his former employer now that her dad has signed with a rival.
But my daughter, funny story with her, she knows there's a lot of history in my career with the Eagles. And so when I told her that we're going to be going to Philly, she kind of was just like, does that mean we're going to win now? And I just started smiling again. And I was like, hopefully we can win some more games.
Kids have a way of just being brutally honest. I don't even care if that story's made up.
No, I love it. And he should have said, yeah, we are. We are. You know who my quarterback is? Do you know what receivers we have over there? He should have just went through the whole roster to his little girl and be like, look, this is why we are going to win. I love kids' honesty when it comes to just anything, man. Kids say the darndest thing. That was a TV show, right? It might still be a TV show. I love kids say the darndest things, and Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, which I think Travis Kelce,
yeah,
we talked about.
My favorite thing is hearing stuff that your guys' kids, Curtis, Will is still a bit too young, though she does say funny things. But more so like less embarrassing things. Whereas Jada's lying to you, Bump, Jada's Bump's daughter, about what was it? You're famous, but what was it?
But not actually.
But not. Nah. He's kind of like you, Dad. He's famous, but not really.
But not really.
This is one of my favorite things.
You ain't lying, babe. You was not lying.
Next up, courtesy of Zags beat writer and my fantasy football foe, Theo Lawson of the Spokesman Review, the Wi-Fi network in the Utah Jazz's home arena is called Jordan Pushed Off.
Can we be honest?
Yeah.
He did. That left hand. I mean, that's all it takes is just a little push, a little help going in the wrong direction.
But because it was cool, wow, they didn't call it.
Exactly. Nah. Well, what are you going to do? Call someone cool? No, you're not. You're going to let it happen. Jordan Pushed Off.
And that's the second time he pushed off. He has another game winner against Russell, I believe, in the same series where he pushed off again. But it's Jordan. You ain't calling that.
Is there anything that you hang on to as like a sports wrong that your team suffered that you'll never let go? Like mine, do I have one? I can't think of one.
Nothing that my team suffered, but if Draymond doesn't get suspended for pushing LeBron in the
game five,
the area,
yeah,
Cleveland ain't winning that.
Right. Is there, who doesn't love a conspiracy theory? We're going to wrap up with one. Is there an anti-Nick Foles conspiracy theory brewing in Apple TV's Patriots docu-series? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to play you two cuts. The first is going to be the actual Philly special TV call as it happened during Super Bowl 52.
This could decide the game.
Fourth and goal. And they're going to snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws, caught. Foles, touchdown.
Now, this is the, quote, play-by-play from Apple TV's The Dynasty, a Patriots documentary.
Snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws, caught, touchdown.
Wow.
Notice the difference between those two cuts, you guys?
I did. Curtis, did you?
Oh, I definitely did.
What was the difference, Bump?
No Nick Foles.
Foles' name completely erased. Completely erased from the cut.
And we know that Tom Brady has kind of had it out for Nick Foles ever since that game.
And here's the deal. This is not, quite obviously, this is the exact same call with Foles' name just edited out of the Apple TV version.
Do you know what powerful men and women are able to do?
Man.
Could they control history? They control history. They're going to somehow, that clip is going to be the call. They're going to erase the original one.
The Nick Foles
and
erasure.
Tom Brady, because Curtis, as you point out, all right, Tom Brady is part of the production team, right? This is his whole deal. He is controlling history. He has such a dislike for Nick Foles. He goes, you know what? Negative. Yeah, we lost that game, but you're getting no love.
I am not letting Nick Foles be erased. The Philly special, I associate exclusively with Nick Foles.
Mm-hmm.
I see him just jogging into the end zone. Like, I see it in my brain. You can't take that from him.
Do you think there's jealousy, too, on Brady's part? Because earlier in that game, Brady dropped a pass. And
he
then
did.
Nick Foles,
oh, for sure,
caught a pass.
Yeah,
no
Brady,
hands.
Not a great receiver. Reek Woolen would tell you that. Something you'd love and hate to see the Seahawks do in the draft. What are your answers? 866-979-3776. Text now. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Very quickly, one thing that I should have included to timeline that I didn't is Dan Monson is the fired head coach of Long Beach State, who's taking on, are they already taking on Arizona, or is that later, Curtis?
That's on Thursday.
That's on Thursday. They're taking on Arizona. And not expected to win. Huge underdog, obviously. But they were not expecting to be in the tournament, kind of like accidentally got there after firing their head coach, who's still with the team. So he's at attorney press conference and said, I don't have to answer anything I don't want to because I'm working for free today, which is an all-time quote ahead of not an introductory press conference, ahead of a press conference where your team's in the tourney just being like, yeah, I've already been fired. I don't have a job, but I'm still coaching because we made it and I didn't think we would.
That's a boss move. And it's also great. Like, hey, come get me too if you want me. Got my team here.
Exactly,
let's get it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Obviously, best of luck to him, to Monson, Dan Monson, clearly. And can't wait for the tourney to start. Let's get to what we're actually talking about here. Something that you'd love and hate to see the Seahawks do in the draft. So you can join this conversation on the Mac and Jacks text line. I already have a couple answers. 866-979-3776. One thing you'd love to see. One thing you'd hate to see. Bump, what do you got?
One thing that I would love to see is if he is available. I've been shouting his name from the rooftops, our guy Troy from UW. I would love to see them draft him if he is available. There are two players I would love to see them draft if available. Troy from UW and Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. If those guys are available, I say you go ahead and get them. I know there are a lot of defensive line concerns. I get that. But I feel like the offense is going to have to carry the torch. Mm-hmm. The offense is going to have to lead the charge into the season. And how do you do that? You protect the quarterback and you get him another weapon. Because the tight ends they have right now are fine. Noah Fant is a baller. You got Farrell Brown, who's more of a blocker, but he can receive the football. You need two dynamic tight ends. That's what Bowers does for you. And Troy is just a guy who can move. He is a tackle. I don't think you need a tackle, but he is a tackle who will move into the guard spot and will make this offense dynamic when it comes to pulling guards and all that good stuff. That's what I want to see.
Okay, one thing you don't want to see.
I don't want to see them move out of the first round. You bet not do that. You bet not move out that first round. I understand there are some plans that you have, and maybe you feel like your scouting department has watched all the film that they could, and they could find some guys that fit your system, but you are kind of remodeling the house.
Yeah.
Okay, you're remodeling the house, as Stacey pointed out earlier, and that would hurt the remodel.
And you want a good foundation, right? You want some quality. You don't want to get discount cement or whatever. I don't know how to build houses.
You want discount drywall?
I know. Come on.
You want wet wall?
What else do you use to build houses? Wood? I don't know. From Jen in Beaverton, would love to see a defensive line diamond in the rough who ends up being a great player for years to come. Love it. Would hate to see taking a wide receiver early. This is a good wide receiver class at the very top. I agree with Jen, though. I want to see trenches. And that's actually for my love to see. I said, would love to see them address the trenches. I don't care if it's Troy Fautanu and you get a starting tackle when you already have two. Whatever it is.
Hank will be a tackle. Troy will not be a tackle.
But I want to see you address the trenches.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. A quality addition to the trenches. What I do not want to see, I'm going to copy yours and say move out of the first round entirely. Mm-hmm. I understand coming from that Ted Thompson background, the Packers front office background, why John Schneider would want to do that. It's typically been his MO. But it is hard for me to swallow doing that all the time and then lamenting that you don't have the high draft picks of your NFC West peers.
Right.
It's like, well, eventually you got to make a choice. And they did, right? Staying at number five, I thought was a great move. Staying at number nine to take Cross was a great move. They stood pat in those two decisions, and I hope that they do the same here. Okay, let's get to some more of what people would love and hate to see. Would hate to see from the 206 a reach for a quarterback, running back, corner, or wide receiver. So current areas where there's
no need for quarterback,
starters.
No need for receivers, no need for running back. I think you're good in those departments. Now, you're going to draft at those positions, but probably in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round.
Yeah. Fred in Birch Bay says, would hate to see a defensive back taken first for a second.
Nah, don't do it.
Yeah,
don't do it. You already got, you signed two or three safeties already?
Yes, and they might take a safety. We had Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic join us, who said it's a pretty decent class for some safeties, but those are, day two, day three guys.
Yeah.
Not a guy that you're taking really early. And he said the same thing with center. There's some good centers, quietly good centers. Those are day two guys. There might be an early run, but...
Yeah, you got two guys already at center. You're good.
Let's see, running back or quarterback before the seventh is the most common, would hate to see. Love to see Brock Bowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's something. He could go.
Come on now.
He could go high.
I've seen him as high as 10, 9 or 10.
I've seen him at 5 to the Chargers. Really? But you know how they have to do so many mocks that eventually you're just like, well, let's say the Chargers do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brock Bowers at 6. How would you feel, though, about taking a tight end knowing that you need defensive and offensive line help?
It depends on who's available, right? I think you pointed out yesterday Byron Murphy was the guy that you like out of Texas. He's an interior lineman. And then when it comes to offensive linemen, there's only a couple out there really that I really like. So,
yeah,
you know, it's that's the thing about the draft is you can have a wish list, but it's kind of like when I was growing up, I had a wish list, but I knew I was only going to get like 3 things on that wish list. Mm-hmm. Now, just circumstances, right? Things change every day. And then as far as the draft, things are going to change every, 15, 20 minutes. So just be ready to respond. Be ready to react. And they'll be ready to do that.
From the 253 opposite of us, would love to see them trade back.
Really?
Yeah. Would hate to see them take just another backup quarterback, someone like Bo Nix.
Well, at number 16, you are at the position where the guys start to blend a little bit.
Yep.
And if you get up to 16 and no one there really gets you going, you know, gets the juices flowing, then all right, I can see that. But I would stay at 16. It is so important to me that you use that number 16 pick. Well, also I want to see get into that second round. I need you to get into the second round and try to make something happen. You do have we got rid of one of the third round picks, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
We got rid of one of the third round picks.
When the Howell trade.
So it'd be tough to get into the second round, but I'd love to see it.
From the 253, all kinds of answers here. Would hate to see interior line as a first round pick. Would love to see them trade up and get a quarterback.
Nah.
I mean, I would love to see that in that it's chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I don't actually want them to.
But there's so many teams that need a quarterback and who are fighting. I put out a list yesterday. I think the Raiders are going to try to move up.
I agree.
Vikings are going to try to move up. Yep. The Broncos might try to move up and the Saints. So, yeah, there's a lot of people.
I think J.J. McCarthy's going at like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And there was a world not that long ago when we were talking about J.J. McCarthy. Would he be a reach at 16? And I think that there's going to be that run where he just goes much earlier than we thought.
This is a good quarterback class, and there are really quarterback needy teams. Now, every year there are quarterback needy teams, but when you have a team like the Vikings, now there are rumors that Justin Jefferson is trying to be moved or whatnot, but if he stays there, you still got Addison. There are situations where a young quarterback can get drafted early and not lead a team on a run, but really accelerate the process.
This morning, Pete Thamel said Nebraska's finalizing a 6-year deal to make Washington athletic director Troy Dannon the school's athletic director. That move comes less than 6 months after Dannon accepted the job with the Huskies. So what's it mean for the Dogs moving forward, and what do they do for their head coaching search for men's basketball? We're going to ask Huskies insider Christian Capel about all of that coming up next.